All the research in this podcast has been conducted by me and my team at Ross Thurn Research. If you would like to know more about what we do and how we can help you, visit us at www.rossthurnresearch.com. Hello and welcome back to Unearth the Past, the podcast where we delve into the family history of interesting people, uncovering captivating tales that have been hidden in the past. On today's episode, we are joined by a very special guest, folks. She is behind some of Britain's best dramas, including the insanely popular Happy Valley, the brilliant After the Flood, also Brassic, Scott and Bailey, Traces, Ridley, Clocking Off, I could go on forever. I am absolutely thrilled to be joined by BAFTA-winning producer, the fabulous Juliet Charlesworth. Juliet, welcome to the podcast. Juliet Charlesworth.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
It's brilliant. I can't wait. I'm really
excited. Are you excited?
Hugely.
So you have taken an Ancestry DNA test. I came tonight to your work and made you spit into a tube, which was lovely.
Yeah, in a car park in Bolton.
Literally in a car park, folks, in Bolton. And we'll talk about that at the end, if that's all right. We'll go through the results and unpick your traits. We'll find out if you're a morning person, if you're a night person, if you get hangry.
Oh, I do.
Oh, do you get hangry?
Yeah,
are you a hangry person?
Yes, I do.
David, does she get hangry? Yes.
Yeah.
So we'll go through all that at the end. But I thought first, should we go into your family tree?
Yes, please.
Let's do that.
Thank you.
So you know a lot about your mum's side, don't you?
A bit. More about that.
More, okay. Yeah. So, shall we start with your dad's side?
Yes, please.
So, I thought we would go down your dad's dad line.
Yes.
Yes. We'll go down the Reeves-Charlesworth line. Yeah?
Yeah.
So, Reeves-Charlesworth was born in 1898. And the first record I have for him is from 1939, and that's just before the war. And he is living with Hilda Crowther, which would be your... Grandma. And the children, and they're living at Ryecroft. I don't know if you've heard of Ryecroft.
Sheffield.
In Sheffield, that's on Whirlow Park Road.
Whirlow Park Road, yes.
I didn't know a lot about Whirlow Park Road.
Oh.
Yes.
We drove past it recently to go to a funeral, actually, and because my Aunt Jill, who obviously you know about, they lived on Whirlow Park Road, and I said to Dave, oh, let's just drive down Whirlow Park Road for old time's sake.
Yeah.
It's posh, isn't it?
Posh. So when I did a bit of research, it's in the top 10 most expensive roads in Sheffield. Let me tell you that.
Yeah. They had an orchard in their garden.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, so it is one of the most expensive roads in Sheffield.
Yeah.
The house they lived at in 2002 was valued at well over £1 million.
Wow.
It's in 2002. And when they sold the house, and I'm thinking that your ancestors sold it, your granddad, maybe in like the 1950s-ish.
They definitely moved to a flat, a modest flat that they could they could operate within. I remember that. And that would have been, late 50s. Yeah, yeah.
Well, they sold that house, believe it or not, to a socialite, a very wealthy socialite, who, she was called Inge, and Inge Sugden. And she was basically part of the Sugden family made cutlery out of steel.
Yes, Sheffield steel.
Yes, Sheffield
Huge.
Steel. And did you know that after your ancestors left, Frank Sinatra visited that house for tea?
I'm not surprised.
No.
That's amazing.
Frank Sinatra visited that house for tea. So did royalty and showbiz.
They did not.
Yes.
After we left? Well, after grandpa and grandma.
Yeah. It was the house in Sheffield.
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's posh.
But, I don't want to put a damper on it, but it wasn't always that way for your family, right? So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
I like this.
Well, I thought you would.
Yeah.
So I thought that's maybe what we could pick up on today. So I thought if we go back down the Charlesworth side and we'll sort of see where that social progression has happened, because it was only a few generations before that your family were living in like a two down terrace.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they're in the workhouse. Destitute in the workhouse.
No, you would want the workouts. So I thought, should we follow the path then and see how they ended up in this huge house in Sheffield? So following on from 1939, I did find your granddad and your grandmother in the newspaper. And this relates to their wedding that occurred in 1925. And there's a big write-up, by the way, in the newspaper. It was in the Sheffield Daily Telegraph. Would you like to see what your granddad and grandmother looked like on their wedding day?
Yes. Oh, my God. Well, he definitely looks like my dad. But that's lovely. Yes. That's so 1920s. 100 years ago.
100 years ago. But because they were a quite prominent family in Sheffield, which we'll get onto in a minute, there was a huge write-up and it went into intricate detail about what the bride was wearing, what the bridesmaids were wearing, the groom, where everybody was from. It was a huge write-up. Now, I've managed to go back a bit further. Found them on the 1921 census. And on the 1921 census, he is living in the house with his mum and dad. His dad is also called Reeves.
This is grandpa's mum and dad.
Yeah, which would be your great grandparents. And he is managing the company at this point. And the company that he is managing is Reeves Charlesworth Limited Builders. They're builders.
Yeah. Builders.
Juliet, your family do not do things by halves.
No, they are, way.
They do not, let me tell you that. They were not just any old builders. They built most of Sheffield. Did you know that?
I know what my dad's built around
right,
the world.
Okay.
So it sort of doesn't surprise me. There was, as you go into Sheffield, there's a massive wall of flats somewhere. And I built them. So I don't know how much they ever built.
Put it this way, they were arguably the most successful building firm in Sheffield.
Reeves Charlesworth?
Reeves Charlesworth.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where did it all go wrong?
I don't think it did because, you know, if you think about it, like you are remarkably successful in your career. So obviously you've all got that drive, you know, you work hard, you graft and you do well.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But why... why isn't Reeves Charlesworth still trading?
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. So both your granddad and your great-granddad are obviously involved in the building trade. But as I've mentioned, they're not just any old builders. They are remarkably successful. So for example, in 1937, they built the largest bachelor's peas factory.
Oh, yes.
In the country, that cost over £100,000. The new factory was able to churn out 1.5 million tins of peas and 1 million packets of peas in 1 week. Reeves Charlesworth Limited was founded in 1895 by Juliet's 24-year-old great-grandfather. He had a reputation for integrity and straight dealing. The company constructed a range of buildings, from cinemas to factories to social housing and even churches. Reeves Charlesworth also played a role in the construction of the world's first garden city at Letchworth, developing houses on the site. By 1937, they had built well over 2,000 houses for Sheffield Corporation. Their social houses were well built, some even had a garden, and in 1934, the houses on the Woodlands estate had a plug for a wireless and a separate plug for ironing. I have got some images of some of the buildings they've created.
Oh my God.
If you would like to see them.
Yeah.
So this is an example of one of their homes that they built.
Oh, that's lovely.
Isn't that really nice?
Yeah. That's just like normal suburbia. Oh. Beautiful.
Yeah. So that's one of them. And then I can show you another example of one of his homes, which, by the way, the home that I showed you before is still there.
That's just absolutely dead normal.
Yeah. But at the time...
and that was in the 30s.
But don't forget, these are...
this is rebuilding.
Yeah, this is it. So you're getting rid of all the slum clearances.
Yeah.
You've got all your back-to-back houses that have gone up in the 19th century. And the council are paying commissions. And one of the commissions they got was for 80,000 back then to build these houses.
It's huge.
Yeah. I've got some more for you that I can show you.
Oh my God. Oh, that's beautiful.
And they are advertising all the time, honestly, all the time in the paper.
They built that pub.
They built the pub. Yeah, they built the pub.
They're not backwards and coming forwards, are they?
No, not at all.
Love it. When my grandpa died, grandma and grandpa died, dad went down to clear out, you know, I think all of the children must have gone down and helped tidy up the flat that they were in. I remember him coming back. We were living down in Cornwall at the time. Mm-hmm. I remember him arriving back with a box, and within this box was a tin of Bachelor's mushy peas, the like of which we had never eaten before.
Really?
Never. We'd never had tin peas. Did we eat it, or did Dad say, no, I love... No, you had to soak them.
Right, yeah.
You had to sit and soak them overnight or something. And I remember Dad being overjoyed because... You know, he absolutely loved them. Obviously, Mum wouldn't have them in the house. Peas till their dying day. Still eating Bachelor's peas.
As I mentioned, they're builders. They're very, very successful builders. Your great-granddad has got a reputation for being very fair with his workers. He made sure that working conditions were really good for them. Before he became a builder, he stated, I read a newspaper article where from the age of 10, he was working sort of part-time, doing a bit of building.
From the age of 10?
From the age of 10. And then he sort of qualified as a joiner. And when he was he qualified as a cabinet maker. And he was, when him and his fellow co-workers kind of got together, they fought together for better working conditions for cabinet makers within this country. So he was a very sort of fair employer, no nonsense. And I think that's how he got that sort of reputation within Sheffield, is if you want anything building, you go to Reeves Charlesworth.
Because he's fair and good.
Because he's fair and good.
And so he would have been able to employ more builders as well.
Exactly.
So therefore the company could expand.
Exactly. I also found, by the way, your granddad and your great-granddad in this record. I'm going to see if you can figure out what this is.
Oh, it'll be Masonic.
Yeah, Freemasons.
Yeah.
So they were all in the Freemasons.
Of course they were. Because that's how you did business.
Of course it was. Networking.
Charlesworth.
Yep.
October 24, Reeves.
Yep.
Love it. Oh, hold on. Charlesworth. Reeves. Builder.
Wee.
Nothing felt... No, Benjamin Dodworth. Don't know him. Oh, how marvellous.
Yeah. So they were all in the Freemasons. But your great-grandfather didn't just stop at building. He also cared about the people in the community. And I've spoke about that he cared about his workforce, but he really cared about the people in his community. And he wanted to make a difference. So in 1918, he entered into Sheffield City Council. He was co-opted into the Walkley Ward seat. The first election took place in 1921. He was defeated. He was also defeated again in 1922, but he didn't give up.
Come on.
He didn't give up. And in 1922, he was defeated by arguably a very strong Labour candidate. However, in the election of June of 1923, he finally won the seat and he remained as a Liberal independent candidate until 1928.
I knew you were going to say Liberal. Right. Good.
He very firmly did not want to be associated with the two main political parties.
Yeah.
So he stood as an independent member, Liberal member in the City Council. He was also chair of the, I think, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this correctly, the Walkley Hospital Committee. His wife was a keen supporter of the Walkley Women's Liberal League, and she organised various dances and tea parties and you name it. He was president of the Sheffield Master Builders Association.
Oh, that's good.
And later, that then included the whole of Yorkshire.
Good Lord.
In 1923, he was appointed the first ever president of the Yorkshire Educational Association for the Building Industry. And this was to give boys proper training in all things to do with building. He was a keen trade unionist. And as I've mentioned, that when he was a joiner and a cabinet maker, he and his fellow craftsmen fought for better conditions. And I've got some pictures of him. Do you want to see him?
Yeah.
I've got loads of pictures of him.
Yeah.
Because he was such a well-respected man.
He was a leader, not a follower, wasn't he? Wow. This is great.
Yeah. He's obviously very switched on. Yeah. So he starts putting advertisements in the local paper. So in case you wanted to vote for him.
Voted solid for Reeves Charlesworth. Gosh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. He would have been on YouTube.
Yeah.
Good God, he'd be all over the place.
He'd be all over the show. So at one point, he does retire from politics. He dies in 1933. But just...
Gosh, the year after Dad was born.
Only 4 years before he passes away, he's actually considering going for the Rotherham seat.
Come on.
Yeah. So he...
Reeves Charlesworth. Reeves, conscientious.
Reeves Charlesworth is the man.
He really is.
He is the man. Can we keep going back? Reeves Charlesworth then, your great-granddad, he was the son of Robert Charlesworth, your great-great-grandfather, and Jane Needham. Robert was born in 1845 in Grantham, Lincolnshire.
Oh.
And he was a cabinet maker.
Which is where the joinery comes from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. On Christmas Day in 1868, he marries Jane in Pittsmore, which I think is in Yorkshire. And the couple have 6 children. Now, obviously, one of those is Reeves that we've spoke about.
Yes.
But they had another son named after his dad, called Robert. And Robert was born in 1879. And both you and Robert are involved in the arts.
Ah!
Did you wonder where that might
have
come from?
Well, my Uncle Mike was in drama and English literature. He was a tutor at Repton College in Derbyshire.
Right.
So he did drama that and produced and directed multiple plays all around the world. But I didn't know where he'd got it. I don't think I got it from him.
No.
You know, interested in the arts. But I wondered why him, amongst all the builders, of which everybody else appears to be, why did he become artistic?
When you see cabinet maker or joiner in a family tree, it can mean set designer, right? So, which would explain why Robert Charlesworth, the son, who I'm about to talk about now, Reeves' brother, went into the art. So he is a world-renowned bass vocalist.
You're kidding.
No. He toured the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa and Germany. Literally, I've got so many articles in the newspaper.
What year would this be?
So this would be start of the 20th century.
Gosh.
Do you want to see what he looks like?
Yeah. Did he ever marry?
He did marry.
Okay.
Yeah, he did marry.
Oh, gosh. What a matinee idol. Wow. That's beautiful.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a fabulous picture, isn't it?
It's like a spotlight picture.
Yeah. There's another part of the tree that I want to talk about.
Yes.
Okay, so we've basically just gone down the Charlesworth side.
Yeah.
So we've gone from Reeves, your granddad, then went to your great-granddad, Reeves, and then we went back a step further, and we went to Robert.
Yeah.
And we can actually, if we go back a step further than that, you get, which would be what, your great-great-great-granddad, John, who was a painter. So they're all kind of involved in the sort of building trade. But I want to go back to your grandmother, which is Hilda Mary Crowther. Her dad was called Harry Crowther.
Yeah.
And her mum was called Elizabeth Jane Froggatt.
Yes.
Does that mean anything to you?
No.
No? Okay. Well, I managed to find your great-grandmother's birth certificate, if you'd like to see it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can attempt to read this out, Juliet. If you can't, because the writing's appalling, I'll cut this out.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You see?
On the 22nd of November, 1873. I can't quite tell. 3 Durney Street? I can't quite tell where. Elizabeth Jane, a girl, born to Richard William Froggatt and Elizabeth Froggatt, formerly...
Bunting.
He's an engine fitter.
Now, I've got another record to show you if you want after that.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first record that I find her on after her birth is the 1881 census. Now, this is slightly better reading. But if you have a look right at the bottom of the census, you will see that she is living with her mum, who's called Elizabeth Froggatt, because she's now married. The head of the household is Nana, which is Elizabeth Bunting, and they're living in Carbrook Hall Hotel. So I just wondered if you can just right at the bottom. Have you found her?
Yeah, Elizabeth Bunting.
So that would be grandma.
Elizabeth Froggatt?
That would be mother.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't the writing terrible?
The writing's terrible. Yeah. Looks like horse bunting, but it can't be.
So we've got Elizabeth Bunting, yeah, which is grandma.
Yeah.
We've got Elizabeth Froggatt, daughter. And
52,
then
grandma. Yeah.
Yeah.
Daughter 29.
And if you look here, it says widow.
Ah.
Oh. Yeah. So we've got W for widow.
Yeah. And so, then ditto for the 29-year-old.
Yeah.
For the second Elizabeth.
Elizabeth Froggatt, who's your great-grandmother, her dad has died by 1881. So we know that he was alive in 1873 when she's born, but we know that by the 1881 census, he's passed away. I found this.
A fatal quarrel. On Friday night, Richard William Froggatt, an engineer aged 29, residing at Brightside near Sheffield, died at 29. Died from the results of a stab inflicted during a wrestling tussle or fight with a man named Thomas White in the kitchen of the Carbrook Hotel, which is where his wife's mum
owns.
On the night of 18th of January, the occurrence was apparently accidental. Hang him. Hanging's too good for him.
So this goes to court.
Yes.
And then we've got a really good description of what happened on the evening. Newspaper reports stated that on the 18th of January 1875, shortly before 11 o'clock in the evening, Richard, Juliet's great-great-grandfather, walked into the kitchen of the Carbrook Hall Hotel, having just finished helping his mother-in-law, Elizabeth Bunting. Thomas White, who was a friend of Richard, was sitting near the fire with a knife in his hand cutting some tobacco. He had been drinking, but Richard was sober and was described in the paper as a quiet and inoffensive man. White challenged Richard to a play fight. The pair started wrestling, and almost immediately Richard pulled away and stated that he was bleeding. He had been stabbed in the leg with the knife and there was blood running down the side of his trousers. White tried to stop the bleeding and cried bitterly when he realised that he had stabbed his friend. He was prosecuted for the stabbing and the case was heard at the Crown Court in Leeds, where the judge stated it was clear that the wound was the result of an accident and White was acquitted. I've got a picture of his grave if you'd like to see it.
Oh! Oh! Richard William Froggatt, who died at Carbrook Hall, January the 22nd, 1875, aged 29. We cannot, Lord, thy purpose see, but all is well that's done by thee.
So apparently his wife's on here as well, but she's not on here.
So, oh, there's a story there.
Yeah. As a token,
she took off with Thomas.
No.
That's the drama in you.
You'll be going home tonight with David writing a new pit line. So you may be wondering then, what happened to your great-grandma's mum? Did she remarry? What happened to
her? Yes. This is Elizabeth, 29 years old.
Yep.
August 3rd at the parish church, John Punsbongen of Tinsley to Elizabeth, widow of Richard William Froggatt of Carbrook Hall. She gets married. Doesn't say what year.
So she gets...
1881.
Yeah, so she gets married in 1881, which is just after the census is taken. But your great-grandmother never seems to live with her. She stays with her nana, basically.
At the Carbrook Hotel?
Yeah. I've got a picture of the hotel. Do you want to see
it? Oh, yeah. I'm fascinated to see this hotel.
Yeah. So I can tell you a bit
more about... I imagine it a bit like a boarding house in Bridlington.
Yeah. I suppose it is, actually. But I can tell you a bit more about it if you'd like.
Yeah.
So the hall dates back... Carbrook Hall dates back to the 12th century. The hall was rebuilt in 1462, and it was actually used for a roundhead meeting during the siege of Sheffield Castle.
Good God.
During the English Civil War, the owner at the time was a gentleman called John Bright, who was a close ally of Thomas Cromwell, and John Bright was a leading parliamentarian. Your ancestors, so your three times great-grandparents, William and Elizabeth Bunting, take over the hall in the 1860s. So before that, I found William on the census, and he has got his own flour mill. So I don't know how you go from
flour to hotels
to being a publican, which is what he's done. It is the most haunted hotel. It's not a hotel anymore. It's now a Starbucks. It is. Place in Sheffield. Some of the things that the Starbucks staff have seen and witnessed. Probably your great great granddad.
Probably is having a tussle with a knife in a kitchen. Gosh.
No, but I have a picture. So this is what it would have looked like when your ancestors had it.
Oh, this is Carbrook. It does just look like a boozer, doesn't it?
It does. Sorry to interrupt the podcast for the next 60 seconds, but as many of you know, I am a proud supporter of The Power of One, an amazing organisation that supports women across the globe who have dedicated their lives to animal rescue. This week, I would like to share the story of Strays Without Borders, founded by Snezana and Milka. Based in North Macedonia, the non-for-profit organisation is dedicated to rescuing and rehabilitating street dogs. In a country that is struggling with institutional challenges and poverty, they face immense obstacles. The organisation is desperate to raise £10,000 for a spray neuter campaign targeting 150 dogs. Your donation, no matter the size, can really make a difference. Now, I know times are tough, so if you can't donate, as I say every week, please just spread the word about this remarkable organisation and the work they are doing. Details about the organisation and the campaign can be found in the podcast description. Thank you so much for listening. Now back to Juliet's family tree. I'm just trying to think about your career. Have you always, like from a young age, did you know that that was always a field you were going to go in, Juliet? Did you know?
I sort of did. I remember watching the telly from very, very young, and it was the Blue Peter presenters and going, I'm going to do that.
Really?
Yeah. But then I also wanted to be a nurse at one point. Television was, I was mesmerised by what it was and storytelling and you know, I used to play with my dolls and make me and my little sister play with the dolls and make up stories. We were constantly making up stories. And then I wanted to go to drama school. I wanted to go to RADA from about the age of 10 or 12. I couldn't be a ballerina.
Did you try
I'm too tall to be a ballerina.
Really?
Yes.
That was my problem.
Yeah. So sad. But then, I did always want to go to RADA. I always wanted to be an actress. I thought it was an actress that I was going to take. So as soon as I went to, not my first secondary school, but we went to boarding school when we moved to Hong Kong, I started with speech and drama and diction from the day that I arrived there and did all of those speech and drama exams and stayed within then that drama world. So yeah. I suppose really from the age of 12, I was on that path myself, knowing that that was the thing that interested me the most. And that was the thing that, energized me, I suppose, more than I've never been academic. I'm not an academic kid. I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't do maths and I don't do, you know, all of that stuff. I can't. I'm a bit more
creative.
Flighty.
Flighty.
I don't know, but I don't have that sort of that. Yeah, I can't sit down with maths, physics, chemistry. No. It's like double dutch to me.
But you must be very good at organisation.
Bossy.
Well,
some would say bossy.
I'm looking at David. David's nodding. David's nodding.
I am bossy. I've always been bossy. My mum will tell you from the day that I was born that I was organising everybody in the house. Mm. So I am one of life's great organisers. But I think that then settles me, because if I know that all of those things are organised, then a lot of stuff can wax and wane and surprise us because the foundation of organisation is there. I can't have everything floating about. I need a real structure, and then everything can surprise you within that structure, which is what, certainly in my career, everything surprises us every minute of every day. There's nothing you can take for granted, only that everybody hopefully is going to turn up at 8 a.m. But even that, sometimes, you know.
No. How you deal with that then? You know, how you deal with those surprises?
Yeah, I love those surprises.
Do you?
I do love those surprises. Yeah. I do, because I sort of feel that if I have done my work and my best work, and the team, all of us together have done our best work in, you know, finding the greatest story, making sure we're telling the story correctly, find the greatest cast, find the greatest locations, find the greatest team to bring it all to life. If we have that structure, what are we going to shoot today? You know, it comes all down to that, doesn't it? Mm. Where do we need to be today? What are we going to shoot today? What's our goals of the day? If we have done all of that work as brilliant people, which is what we are, then it snowed, shouldn't have done that. That person's sick, oh, that's a bit of a worry, might have to, you know, drop that scene and pull that scene in. Oh, you can't come in at all, right, we're going to have to rewrite this. So there are constantly bombs throughout the day, and that's what brings a new energy to it, because if you are too prepared and overscheduled and too rigid, then there isn't any room for energy, and so you need to bring some energy into the room.
I'm just thinking about your family tree and those sort of everything you've described me there. Do you think that comes then from the Charlesworth side? The fact that, you know, Reeves Charlesworth, your great great granddad, set up this business in 1895. The fact that he was able to manage a group of men, which he would have been in them days. And he was seen as, you know, personable, fair, treated everybody well, which are the characteristics that I see in you. Because in order for that great team to work, they have to almost be guided by somebody that they respect, that they trust, that you know, is fair and likeable, which is you, right? So do you think you might have got some of those characteristics from your...
Definitely got it from my dad.
Yeah.
And he must have, maybe he got it from his. Because I remember, so we moved to Hong Kong when I was 11 years old. We'd been living in Todmorden, and dad had been in the office in Manchester at Salford Quays, weirdly, which is now where I do work sometimes. So we moved to Hong Kong, and dad built... didn't single-handedly, obviously, but the new Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, it was new, I know, this I'm talking about 40 years ago, it was brand new, this beautiful, huge building on the front of Hong Kong Harbour. And back then, and probably still now, the Chinese builders, the contractors, it was always bamboo. All of the scaffolding would have been all bamboo and tied together with rope. Yeah.
Right.
And they were just like, wow. Incredibly, it was the most unbelievable thing. But they would climb up it without the use of ladders. And how many people, Chinese contractor builders, Hong Kong Chinese, fell from this scaffolding while they were building? There was a number, but I can't remember that number now. But I do remember dad coming home sometimes going, you know, this has happened and that's happened. And he was pushing back then in Hong Kong, which is something you sort of didn't do, to actually have proper, the proper steel scaffs with the proper ladders to get up and down instead of, you know, literally used to jump. You'd see them and think, my God. But it was all over Hong Kong. All of the Hong Kong buildings were put up this way. So I do remember him pushing for that then. I remember him pushing for health and safety. I remember the conversations about people having died on the building plots. And I remember when they finally, they carried the very auspicious, these beautiful lions that I think that sat outside either side of this massive building. Beautiful, beautiful big things, emblems of the Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, which they walked over in a procession on the day that the bank opened, this enormous procession. And you had to go and touch, you know, polish his paws, the lion's paws as he sat on the front then. But it was, and that was all about, that was very auspicious, and it was about belief, and it was about it was about making that building safe and making his workforce safe. And I think a lot, I remember those conversations very well, and I remember listening to those conversations and Dad being quite passionate about the fact that people don't go to work to die, that people should be looked after much better in the workplace. Yeah. And I never knew I did know my grandpa, Dad's dad, but I never knew him well enough to listen into those conversations of his. But I think about, my dad is a very fair man. He's a gentleman. Mm. He looks a bit like Terry Scott, and he's got a lovely sense of humour, and very warm and brilliant. So I think in terms of the person that I am, I believe it would be more generated through my dad.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think before, so we're going to move on to your mum's side of the tree, but I'm just going to make sure that there was nothing else in this side that I've not
only
shown
one murder.
You. Oh no, I was a bit disappointed. I know. Oh, Julia, there's got to be a few killers. Can we talk about your mum's side of the tree? Now, can we just say, I know very little about this side. The reason I know very little about this side is because Juliet has done quite a bit of work.
Not me. Others within the family. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
So if you are just tuning in, your grandparents are Eric Shaw, and Josephine Wainwright. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mary Wainwright. Mm-hmm. And Eric Shaw's parents are James Kershaw and Hannah Louise Fernley. Mm-hmm. And Josephine's parents are Joseph Appleyard Wainwright and Lillian Hinchcliffe. Yeah, Hinchcliffe. Can I just say, I love the Appleyard. I love that middle name. And you know, like when you think about where names come from, don't you? You know, think like Johnson, son of John. Literally, somebody's just gone Appleyard.
Yeah.
That'll stay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
So do you want to tell me then a bit about that side of the family?
Well, I don't think I know as much as you're hoping that I do.
Okay.
So the Wainwrights, I know that the Wainwrights went to America.
Yeah.
I know that they originally were manufacturing rope and Hessian, I think, and then moved to America on a wagon train. It took them weeks and weeks and like 7 weeks to get somewhere. Yeah. And in one of the letters back, there's a little bit of woe is me, and we're not settling quite as well as we should have done, but don't tell anybody. Tear this bit off if you show this letter to anybody. You know, it was all about show, wasn't it? But then they started Wainwright's Brewing, and it was the first skyscraper in America is the Wainwright Building in St. Louis, which is still there and architecturally is listed and is now owned or occupied by the St. Louis Council. And it's the most magnificent building. So they obviously did, in the end, do very well. But I don't think it was that easy. But there were so one family went over, and then the other members, you know, sisters and brother-in-laws and all sorts went and joined in. But that was the Wainwrights over there. I think it's connected to the Wainwright Brewers over here.
Right, okay.
Who were sort of Preston Clitheroe way, aren't they?
Yeah.
I would imagine that sort of has always made sense in my mind, that we must be the Brewers. We're also connected on the Hinchcliffe Wainwright side to Wordsworth's.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah,
and the lakes, Walker.
Yeah.
And yes, the literary Elizabeth.
Yeah. So there's Alfred Wainwright.
Alfred.
Yeah. Who's the Walker. And I noticed, I think it was his mum, and Javert is here now, who was born, I think, in Penistone. Was that right? His mum was born in, which is the area where you're...
We all stayed there. Yeah. Yeah. I was christened there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Granny was always in, she always lived in Penistone. My granny never moved from Millhouse Green. Yeah, I think they always stayed there. My mum told me that they were sort of estate management people. They were people of the land.
Yes.
Okay. They looked after other people's estates. They looked after land, land registry, land selling. Because we used to drive around in my mum's Land Rover when I was little, and she had a Land Rover for so long so she could see over hedges. and we could have a look and say, oh, how lovely is that? Oh, how lovely. Oh, look at that field. Look at that moor. Look at that horse. But she's very much that person of land and horses and moorland. So I know that there's art on that side. I think the Wainwrights were artists. I think the Wordsworths were writers. The Hinchcliffes, I've got no idea about. But it does seem quite colourful. And then I've got a Robert the Bruce story. That's written down in my bag of things.
Have you? So just to let you know, Juliet has brought the best bag of things you've ever met in your life. Honestly, I don't know if
beautiful
you're probably not going to
people and beautiful
but
pictures.
Absolutely beautiful pictures. Just a full treasure trove.
We just don't know who any of them are.
Of memories. We just want to know who they are. What we could do, though, I could look and try and date some, and then it might narrow it down a bit.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
But the Robert the Bruce thing, I think, is from the Kirkpatrick's on the Shore side.
Okay.
Was that an illegitimate child was bought by this hand servant, by this maid who was a Kirkpatrick, and they were brought back to wherever up in Scotland, because they were Scottish, weren't they, the Kirkpatricks? Yeah. Wrapped in some tartan of Robert the Bruce. And this baby obviously survived, but it was supposed to be the illegitimate son from one of their housemaids, housekeepers. It was supposed to be Robert the Bruce's son. And this tartan was supposed to have lasted. And my Auntie Josephine, who passed away not so long ago last year, she kept the tartan and then ended up putting it on, I don't know, polishing one of the horses with it. That's literally what she says. I think I used it for the horse.
Wow. Ridiculous. Okay, that's the best story I've ever heard.
It's ridiculous.
Now, the Shores, is that the side where you have got the station master?
Yes, Eric Shore. Eric Shore. So my granddad was the station master.
Yeah, for years. A very well-respected station master.
Yeah.
So I found a lot of newspaper articles about his time as a station master.
I've got lovely pictures. And when Kings and Queens came and opened various stations. Yeah.
Yeah.
Aww. And my granny, I have to say, when you do look at this tree, and I've got pictures, my granny, she lost him very, very young. It was the week before I was born when my granny lost my granddad, Eric. And I never remember seeing my granny laugh. She did used to titter, but not laugh. That side of the family aren't enormously funny people, but she never really laughed. There's a picture somewhere of her, of the two of them together, grandpa and grandma together, and she's really laughing. And it just struck me that that's an image that I've never seen. So the first time she left the house after grandpa died was to come and see me as a baby. So I was a little bit sort of the chosen one because I think that was so close. And I always made it because I lived up here. I made a huge effort to go and see Granny a lot. She was lovely. Granny was lovely, really posh, twin set and pearls all the time, and a hostess trolley in a semi-detached in Penistone.
Love it.
I know. So some of it doesn't make sense.
That will be like me. Yeah.
I think she really thought she was something very, very special. They probably were. You said they were. Yeah. But she definitely had airs and graces. Definitely. We're no average Joes.
You are not.
Oh, no.
No. I'm very conscious because we've been chatting forever.
Yeah.
and that people's parking probably going to run out and nobody wants a ticket, that I should wrap this up.
Yeah.
But before we do that,
yeah,
I'm going to do two things. The first one is a question that I ask everybody, and that is, if you could have anybody at all from your family tree for dinner tonight, who would it be and why, and what would you cook them?
It would be the Joseph Wainwright who went to America.
Yes.
The very first one who went there, because that was such a massive, huge trip. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'd cook him fish and chips, because he needs something northern and something homely to come back to. And he probably hasn't eaten that well because he's been on his wagon train for so long. We would literally talk about Penistone versus Philadelphia. Why did you do it?
Mm.
Such a huge trip to do. Do you ever wish you didn't do it? He did come back, and he would come back for like a year at a time. It wasn't on coming back for the weekend. They would come back for like a year at a time. One time he went back and he met his 7.5-month-old child. So he would come back for long periods. Now, was that because he missed it so much? Was he bragging? Was he getting more business together? I don't know. But he's the one, I think for a lot of us, he's the one who really jumps out as, gosh, that was a big thing to do, wasn't it? That was a huge leap.
I think especially when, like you said, so many of your ancestors from Penistone didn't move, did they?
No,
they stayed
everybody
there,
stayed.
But he just had something about him, didn't he, where he said, right, okay, I can maybe provide a better life for my family, or whatever it was that made him take that trip.
And then over the years, he must have turned up there with not much money. He really must have.
Yeah.
And then over the years, doing this and doing, you know, I'm buying this plot of land, I'm doing this business, I've met that person to do business with, will you send me that money? So over the years, he made something utterly remarkable in terms of leaving your mark on this world. Yeah. So I think he is interesting, but I also think he is the one who has left us with the most written history, the most recorded history. I'm sure, you know, these very precious people, I'm sure they all did the most incredible things, but he was the one who left us the letters, left us the building, left us the Wainwright name. So he is certainly the one that you're always going to go, tell me more.
Well, I hope that. And also, every time you open a tin of bachelor's peas,
I'll think about the building.
I always think about Reeves. Should we just have a quick look at your traits and then we should wrap it up?
Yes.
So you took an ancestry DNA test, which told us three things. It gave us your ethnicity estimate, which we can do now.
Which we all know is Yorkshire.
Yorkshire. Your ethnicity estimate. It also gave us something called traits, right? Which is basically, obviously, a lot of where you get your traits from is environment, but also some can be found in your DNA. So I am going to pick earlobes.
Mm.
So it's suggesting that you are more likely to have attached earlobes than non-attached earlobes. And we think that's true, yeah?
Consensus.
We think that's true. We'll go for that one. Now, there is something called earwax type. I'm not going to go down that road.
How would I ever know? Gosh.
Exactly. Hangriness.
Yes.
Okay. So now this is saying your DNA is suggesting you don't get hangry. But David's looking shocked. So I'm thinking you do.
I do.
Now, I'm not convinced of this one, because this is suggesting you're just over halfway more towards introvert than extrovert.
I think I am.
Do you?
Yes, this is a really weird
factor. I was going to say, because I thought, because you're in the arts, that you'd be quite...
No.
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 She's really sociably unsociable.
Yes. Really? Yes. Yes.
It's a good job we're mates. Yes. I think we met over dogs, didn't we, years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, mad dog people. So if the halfway mark, this is basically suggesting that you are more likely an introvert than an extrovert, which we think is pretty true.
Yeah.
I'll go for picky eater. Let's see what it's saying about that. I'm going to ask David. David, is Juliet a picky eater?
The pickiest eater.
I won't have anything you put in front of me.
Really?
Yeah.
Right.
And then even like in restaurants, I'll go, okay, here's the difficult one. Could I please have? Yeah.
Okay. So when I went on set and met you, there was banana bread going round.
Oh, yeah.
Did you eat
that? No, that was, Andy had made that.
Was it banana bread?
Yeah, it was. I did eat that.
So we ate Andy's banana bread.
Yeah, oh, I'll eat that cake.
Yeah, I'll eat cake.
Hello.
Got a very sweet tooth. Now, weirdly, your DNA is suggesting if we've got the
50%. Did my DNA suggest I was a picky eater? Sorry.
Your DNA suggesting you're not really a picky eater. So,
oh my God.
So that is kind of, if you can see the scale.
Oh, I'm the pickiest eater.
Yeah.
I'm really.
So that's picky. Environment.
Yeah.
Your DNA suggests that you're a morning person rather than a night person.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Never go out after dark.
No, I'm just trying to find this. Here we go. Right, last one. Your DNA suggests that you don't like dancing.
I don't.
Well,
I don't. I don't. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
Juliet Charlesworth.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
for coming
so
on my
much.
Podcast. I've thoroughly enjoyed researching your family tree. I have never met, I suppose, such a family when I've been doing this research that has left such a mark on a place. I mean, in terms of things like better education, fighting for people, and that's just remarkable. And I know you have left your mark. So you're just from a family of mark makers.
Oh, and thank you so much. I've been so excited about all of this. I really have. I really have. And I am so fascinated in where I come from and who I am and why I am. Not that it's going to change anything that I do, but I'm just fascinated by those who came. We both like history. Dave and I, we walk around looking at history quite a lot, and we're very interested in where we've come from and why we're here. But all of that is fascinating. I love it. I love from the tussle in the kitchen all the way to the million-pound house. No, it's great.
Yeah,
it's great.
Frank Sinatra popped in.
Frank Sinatra. But after we'd moved out.
After he'd moved, he obviously thought, wait till that lot's gone. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So that is it for this week's podcast. I really hope you enjoyed my chat with Juliet Charlesworth. A huge thank you to my two production assistants, Javeria Salim and Lucy Stott. I also must say a huge thank you to Sam from The Power of One for supporting this podcast. Don't forget, if you would like any research doing, you can check out my research company, Rosthern Research, at www.rosthernresearch.com. And as always, a huge thank you to you, to every single one of you that has downloaded this podcast. I can't believe we got to number 5 in the charts last week. That's huge, especially in our category, hobbies, because there aren't that many different types of hobbies. As you can imagine, it's a very competitive category. So thank you so much for listening and for suggesting guests as well. That's always really useful. If you have a guest that you would like us to research and have a chat to, then please get in touch. You can do so via my website, which is www.michaelahume.com, or on social media at Dr. Michaela Hume. Have a great week researching, folks, and I shall see you very soon.